accession number 19863, Reel 3.
Fishbourne, Reel 3. So you told me you just got into Switzerland with your comrade.
That's right. We were eventually, after about 3 days, we were picked up by the Swiss police and put on a train going we didn't know where, except it was a town called Veal, which I'd never heard of. We were joined by a number of other rank prisoners of war, about 20 of them, who'd been coming into Switzerland at other places. But there was still only John Payne, my companion, and myself as officers. And we duly arrived at Veal, we were met by two people I subsequently found were two New Zealand brigadiers who had escaped about a week or 10 days before and got into Switzerland. And one of those brigadiers said, "I'm very glad to see there are some officers. The embassy has instructed me to tell you to help and organize officers and other ranks in this village. I can't tell you any more. Work with the Swiss just organize yourselves." Well, I had no idea really what was going to be involved. Anyway, I started work with the Swiss. They produced Red Cross, they produced battle dress, supplies of battle dress, and so we were able to change out of our filthy escaping clothes. The officers went into the village pub. By this time there were about half a dozen officers, and about 120 other ranks. Through the Swiss said, "We want to establish little camps in villages round." Veal, where we had a little headquarters there, which I was senior officer for about a week or 10 days, that sort of thing. We set up little camps in villages where it was about 80 other ranks and five or six officers. We told them to liaise with the Swiss and look after themselves, and we couldn't tell them much more. But eventually, of course, we organized John Payne, my naval companion, started to keep accounts because the money was involved. That was quite amusing at the end of our 13 months there. We started by keeping penny accounts just of what we had spent. At the end of Switzerland, the pay people in England sent out a team of an auditor in order to audit what he thought was a straightforward account. And I showed him into the pay office, where I had two paymasters and about half a dozen other ranks, keeping very detailed accounts of every penny that was spent. The auditor who came from England out to sort it all out went on the binge and got DTs. And so that was the end of that. But no, we were highly organized by that time. Switzerland, partly the other ranks mainly were in these little farmland villages. The officers, of which, of course, a very large number, more officers came in. I think we had about 300 or 300 or 400 officers by the end. They were sent up to winter sports result, particularly rather old-fashioned winter sports places like Adelboden and Arosa, where we took over hotels, and in the winter we learned, people learned to ski, and we had a very good time in Switzerland. We were very well looked after in Switzerland. The Swiss were very helpful and very kind, not necessarily hospitable, but they made it quite easy. They left us alone and left us to get on with it. The difficulty was, of course, to occupy people's time. A lot of the soldiers got their feet, of course, well under the table by the end, you know, and they were living with families or parts of families and that sort of thing. But the Swiss were very cooperative. They couldn't, and I was very lucky because I was asked to go and spend the weekend with one of the embassy staff, who I didn't know at the time. I only found out about 3 weeks later, who was really working down at a place on Lake Como, getting escaped prisoners in and getting other people out. We had to sign, I had to sign my soul away when I got into Switzerland by saying that I wouldn't try and get out of Switzerland because they didn't want us to use the channels that were available that went down through occupied France down to Spain. One or two people got onto it by other means, but the only people who were allowed down were the submariners air crew who were very recently trained, but people who'd been in a POW camp for 2.5 years, no, we were just, they didn't want us. Well, we lived there, I suppose, a year and a half. And then, of course, eventually, the frontiers got opened. The war moved on, and Switzerland was then open to occupied France. So we had to get away all this amalgam of Allied troops. 4,500 we were by the end. I can't remember how many officers, about 300 or 400 officers, or maybe more, no, I think about that time. And they came from every part of the empire. There were Australian, even Canadian, British, New Zealanders, Indian, and there were Cypriots as well, you name it. And we had to get those away. So the First Army, the people, they just opened Marseille by the time that part of the war, and you could get away there, but we had to get from Switzerland down to Marseille. So we ran a train. We ran a train about once a week with, I think, 500 escaped prisoners on board from Geneva down to Marseille. The train, however, was going through occupied France. The fuel was very limited, so the train had to stop every 25 miles for the people on the train to get out and cut enough wood in order to get on the next 25 miles. So it took him a little time to get down there. But it was quite an amusing little episode, that. And eventually I came out the very last. I was first in and last out. Brigadier in charge of Switzerland, Brigadier Young Husband, and one or two people from Bern and myself, about eight of us, and we drove out through occupied France to Lyon, where we got on an empty Dakota to go back home. And we duly landed at home, an American-run plane, an American-run airport. So when we got down and the question of getting home, I said, "Where are we?" And they wouldn't tell us. It was quite difficult, you know. If you won't tell us, how do we know what sort of way can we walk there? Do we want a train, transport, etc.? They were very trying to be very security conscious. Anyhow, at last, a chap said, "Well, look, there's a truck going to Oxford tomorrow. Is that any good to you?" Well, it so happened it was very good to me, because my wife was living 18 miles away at Banbury, where I could get a bus to. And so that was the end of my prison and escape and that odd period in Switzerland.
So how did you get back into the war?
Well, then, you see, I was, as I say, because I'd been organizing people in Switzerland, they gave me a good job being G2 at 100 Octo at Sandhurst. That enabled me to get retrained in gunnery and wireless and a certain amount of minor tactics. And I then said, I want to go back to my regiment. Well, after a certain amount of palaver, they agreed, and I went out by slow degrees. I had to go out on a troop ship again, out to Bombay, then across to Calcutta, and eventually I arrived back with my regiment, but they had practically ceased operations. But I got back and as second in command.
And where did you find the units?
They were at a place called Magway in Burma, and going down to Rangoon. And then from Rangoon, the regiment came back to India, and we were at Risalpur for a bit. Well, with difficulty, I got out there. But then, of course, as the regiment was sitting about, and the Japanese war was over, and the war in Europe was about to be over and everything, the bomb had dropped, you know, I applied to come home again. Then I got involved in the control commission in Germany.
What was that like?
I didn't like it much. I was assistant administrative commandant in Berlin for about 4 or 5 months.
Why did you dislike it so much?
There were a lot of rascals about. I found that everybody was on the fiddle, I felt very uncomfortable. As a soldier, I just felt uncomfortable.
What kind of fiddles were there?
Well, there were fiddles with drink and furniture and all sorts of other things.
You mean selling them?
Yes. People were involved in getting, in liberating German possessions and then finding means of getting them home. You know, I'm afraid there was quite a lot of that, and in fact, a very, very senior officer I knew of in one of the services got a whole load of furniture and pictures back to this country.
Was this private property belonging to Germans?
Yeah. And that I hated that period. I felt that was not what soldiering was about at all.
So,
but of course, you know, once the battle is over, everybody's looking about to enjoy life, and if it's useful for afterlife, you can see how the temptations were considerable.
What were relations like with the Germans in Berlin? This was 1950-52.
Correct. There was a certain amount of semi-illicit, only semi-illicit camaraderie, you know. I mean, you weren't supposed to be too friendly with German families, but of course, inevitably, it occurred. It was a funny period, that period of the Control Commission, which the Control Commission was partly military, partly civil, you see, civil of all sides. I mean, there were civil law, civil industrialists, you know, coal industry, all that sort of thing, all trying to rebuild Germany.
Did you make any German friends yourself?
No, I didn't. I wasn't there long enough.
You were there from 50 to 52, I think. What was your job in Berlin?
Assistant administrative commandant. Very difficult to know. I was dealing with all sections of people who were running Berlin at the time, and it was just administration.
Now, in 55, I think you had another job in Korea with the Commonwealth Division from 55 to 56.
Yes, that was after
after the end of the Korean War.
After commanding my regiment, I was sent off to Korea as AA and QMG of the Commonwealth Division. I arrived there, however, really, virtually, as the operational side had virtually finished prisoners who had been taken had come through at Panmunjom. In fact, one of my first jobs was to greet prisoners as they came through at Panmunjom at the end of the war. So I may have been part of the Commonwealth Division, but I saw no action.
So you were there when the armistice was signed?
I was, yes.
What impression did the returning POWs make on you?
All I did was to shake hands with them as they came through Panmunjom, and one was very shocked to see that they were in a pretty poor state. Some were very bitter, some were very dejected. Morale was, on the whole, very low indeed.
So you're talking about their mentality, not their physical condition?
Mostly the mentality. But I saw very little of them. But, you know, that was the impression that anybody who went to greet them at Panmunjom had.
Could much be done for them at Panmunjom?
Nothing there. No, they went straight back, and they went, I think, to Japan to be partly rehabilitated and then shipped home as fast as they could. Japan, you see, was the base for the Commonwealth Division. It was the administrative base.
What were the main problems in doing your own particular job in Korea?
Well, I was doing an ordinary AQ job and just looking at the all the second line, the RASC and the workshops, you know, anybody, medicals, I had to deal with all that, and I ran rear headquarters.